Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 120 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. With it being Monday today, we are going back to our self-reliant skills series, and today we're talking about medicinal herbs. And medicinal plants is something that really interests me a great deal, and I think there's a lot of, I don't know how you'd put it really, but misinformation out there. And as you will all know, everything I try and share with you, I like it to be sort of science-based and have its roots in, you know, testable, provable reality. And as such, that's the sort of thing I'm going to be talking to you about today. Now, there are, as I said, lots of misinformation sites out there where you can maybe get information that is slightly spurious. So I do urge you all to, you know, do your own research and check the claims, check the facts behind the claims of anything if you're going to take it medicinally. Now, obviously, we live in a time now when all of our, or almost all of our medications and prescriptions are pretty much mass manufactured, and we get them all from our doctor's surgery or over the counter at a pharmacist. Now, what I'm certainly not trying to do is disparage that method, and doctors are fantastic and amazing. And as I sit here and talk to you now, I'm still taking some mass-produced painkillers as I recover from my injuries. But one thing that a lot of people don't seem to be aware of is just how many of, even in this day and age, right at the start of the 21st century, 11% of the 252 most basic and essential drugs, as considered by the WHO, the World Health Organization, were exclusively of flowering plant origin. And, you know, things like codeine, quinine, morphine, they all contain ingredients that are plant derivatives. So just because, you know, we are using mass-produced, mass-manufactured medicine, it shouldn't mean that an option and a knowledge of medicinal herbs shouldn't be with us. And I think it's a lovely thing to learn a little bit about, especially because so many of the benefits of using traditional medicines and medicinal herbs are available just by foraging. You know, you don't need to be able to grow anything in particular. So obviously, as I said, the manufactured drugs have become the most important type of drugs that we use. And there's a bit of a preamble that I need to get out of the way, really, is just to say that, you know, before you consider taking any medicinal herbs, you should really, really consider things like side effects and perhaps interactions with other medicines, because some medicines will interact with medicinal herbs or certain medicinal herbs in unpredictable ways. And you should always seek the advice of your doctor. You should also add extra caution if you're pregnant and if you're considering administering them to young people. So just a little bit of a proviso there, a caveat to get out of the way at the start. So the extent of the power of medicinal herbs is something that is still being explored, obviously. As with all medicine and all science, it's a constantly moving frontier. And the alternatives that I'm offering today, they're not perfect, they're not panaceas. And they, as I said, they can carry the same risks and side effects as manufactured medicines. But what I'm going to try and talk to you about is ones that aren't just marketed with unbacked promises. These are things that have genuinely been proved to work or that have shown certain results in tests and what have you. So with all that cautionariness aside, choosing the right plant is something that doesn't have to be particularly difficult. So making decisions about herbs, using more traditional approaches to medicine, is something that you can certainly get your feet wet. You can dip your toes in the water and have a look, because a lot of the things that I'm going to suggest are things that are really, really safe and easy to use and really quite common. And they're things that probably already are contained in your diet. So we're going to start with a couple examples like that. The first of which we're going to say is turmeric. Now, turmeric is this amazingly bright orange spice, and it's believed to have anti-cancer properties, which can prevent some DNA mutations. It's an anti-inflammatory, and it's been taken as a supplement for years and years. And it's also used topically sometimes to treat arthritis if people want to relieve discomfort, and of course as a worldwide cooking ingredient. So according to recent research, turmeric is also showing the possibility as a treatment for a variety of things like joint arthritis and dermatological diseases. So it's been used as a medicinal herb for 4,000 years, and it's a really vital part of alternative medicine in places like India. Some of the things that it has been either shown to help with, or it shows signs that it may help with, and studies are ongoing, are things like inflammation and inflammatory diseases like arthritis, preventing with pain caused by those. Studies have also shown that it may help with preventing DNA mutations that are perhaps cancer preventing. And I'm not suggesting that it is a cancer treatment, but there have been studies that shown it prevents and reduces the number of DNA mutations, which are the things that lead to cancerous cells. And it's also been shown to be helpful for several skin diseases. So, well, some of the things to consider when taking turmeric is, personally, I just like to include it as a part of our regular diet. And that, I think, is the most fail-safe way of including it. When you're going to take it as a supplement, one of the drawbacks is some people tend to take too much, and it can be difficult to trust the quality and dosage that you're getting in supplements. So safety increases when you're eating it as a herb or something, or you're cooking it and using it as a tea. Long-term use can potentially cause stomach problems, but again, this is down to dosage. And it has low bioavailability, which means that if you consume it with pepper, then it can help your body to absorb more of it and therefore more of the benefits from it. Next up, we're going to talk about something else that we're probably all either eating already or have growing in our gardens. It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self Sufficient Hub group and the Self Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show. Next up, and this is just a quick one, and we're going to be talking about lavender. And lavender is something that has a long-standing history as a plant that can help relieve things like anxiety and stress. Now, personally, I've seen the studies, and I'm not so sure how much of this is placebo, but hey, placebos work. And I want you to rest assured that that's not where I'm going with the bulk of this episode, but it is a notable mention because lavender has got a long history of being used as an anti-anxiety plant. It's been proven in studies conducted among dental patients and also been confirmed by other studies that it has a direct impact on mood and cognitive performance. It's been commended for its sedative properties to help people get to sleep and also as an anti-anxiety medication, as I've already said. It's been recently discovered, actually, that lavender also carries anti-inflammatory benefits as well. And people would use this either just diluted and placed straight on the skin for its anti-inflammatory properties, or more readily just used as an oil that you would burn for the smell. Now, as I say, one of the long-standing uses would be as a sleep aid. People would use a bouquet of lavender just in their pillowcase as a sleep aid. And these are all just soothing ways of obtaining a more pleasant experience. And I personally wonder whether this could be obtained by any number of sweet-smelling herbs, but who knows? So it's said to be beneficial for anxiety, stress, blood pressure, and also migraines. It can sometimes cause skin irritations. And if taken in too high a dose orally, it can actually be poisonous. So it's really important to use it as it is suggested. The next one, which is in a similar vein, insofar as it's something that is readily available and a lot of us grow, is chamomile. Now, chamomile has got beautiful daisy-like flowers. It also grows in the wild, so it's something that we can forage for. It's got lots and lots of medical history to it. It's been used the world over, and most people know it as a tea. Chamomile tea is something that we are probably all very, very familiar with. Again, it has calming powers, much the same as lavender. And recent studies have also confirmed that it's safe for long-term use as an anxiety treatment. So beyond its use for anxiety, it's also shown a little bit of potential in some studies for other things, such as insomnia and stress relief. Next, we're on to one of my more readily recommended plants, and we're going to start moving now into sort of two or three that I consider to be top of the pile because they are readily available, they're forageable, and they have legitimate scientific benefits that are testable and provable, and they're just the next ones are, rather than being more common, which stuns me, they're less widely known, less widely used, but to my mind, they are the essential ones that everyone who listens to this podcast, at least if I know my audience, they're the ones that everyone who listens to this podcast should really get a bit of a knowledge of and get to grips with. And we're going to start with meadowsweet. Now, it's quite famous for its role in the development of aspirin. So in the mid-19th century, salicylic acid was isolated from meadowsweet, which later led to the creation of aspirin. But within the herbal world, it's more known and considered for its specific uses as help for the digestive system. But it also has many, many other uses in traditional medicine that have now mostly just fallen away. People don't tend to use it as often these days, but it's one that I think that everyone should get to know. I've actually done an identification video for meadowsweet on my YouTube channel, so you should be able to find that. And I've also done identification videos for the next two that I'm going to be talking about as well. So it's been used as a common treatment through the years for fevers, where it works as a diaphoresis as well as through the effects of salicylic acid in reducing inflammation and heat. It's been used to treat hot conditions in other ways as too, like cooling things like sunburn as a wash for inflammation around the eyes, and even used as a compress for swollen joints or arthritic joints. And it's also been used as a relief for headaches, to calm irritable coughs, and lots of other things that we may or may not mention as we go on. But that, you know, the main emphasis here is that it's a super versatile, super common plant, and it's one that's easy to identify. So even before the discovery of salicylic acid that was then extracted to make aspirin, it's been used for lots and lots of the conditions that we might now take aspirin for. It's got a very distinctive smell, and that's one of the best identification features. Lots of people refer to that smell as smelling a little bit like TCP. So it's like a more fragrant smell, a more fragrant version of TCP, but it's got that TCP tinge to it. And, you know, that in itself is of interest. So it's sometimes referred to as herbal aspirin, and it's not really fair on the plant to call it that because it does so much more. And it's noted, at least within the herbal community, that meadowsweet is an example of how nature can put chemicals together that can do damage with others that may protect you from those plants that do the damage, from those chemicals that do the damage. So where aspirin has a chance of increasing things like indigestion and bleeds and ulcers within us, well, meadowsweet also can be used to heal those same conditions. It's got an element of astringent properties that are going to counteract those negative side effects. So it's being used for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to treat so many different problems. And like I say, it's one that's out there, it's readily available, it's really easy to identify, and it can be used with in so many different ways. And it can be used in all the same ways that all the other plants that we're going to talk about shortly can be used to make things like salves and tinctures. And we're going to get into that in the next section.
Find Self-Sufficient Herb content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel, we also have our website, and now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out.
So next up, we're going to be talking about plantain, and this is just one of the most overlooked plants in the world. It grows everywhere, grows literally everywhere, and you will have this within 100 meters of your house. I guarantee it. You've almost certainly got it in your garden. It's considered a weed. Lots of people try and get rid of it if they try and keep a beautiful manicured lawn, but it is just incredibly, incredibly useful. It's an edible plant. It's not one that I recommend foraging for salads because it just doesn't have a particularly nice taste. It's a bit tough. But in terms of a medicinal plant, I think it is absolutely top drawer. I think it's fantastic. It contains powerful antihistamines and anti-inflammatory. So it's used predominantly as a treatment for bites and stings and inflammations. And you'd literally just chew a piece of the leaf up if you're out on a walk or whatever. You chew a piece of the leaf up and apply that chewed up leaf with all of its liquid oozing from it to the area. You just rub it on there, and it's so super common and available. I always pick up a few leaves of it whenever I go out for a walk when I've got my children with me. And unlike dock leaves, which we've all grown up being told we would use to wipe on our stinging nettle wounds to help them recover, that is purely placebo. This is actually legitimate. This contains actual antihistamines. And histamines are our body's overreaction to bites and stings and things like that. They're what cause allergic reactions. And that's why people with allergies take antihistamines. They block our histamines from overreacting, and they help to block the stinging feeling and the inflammation and swelling that we get with bites and stings. So it's a natural antibacterial and anti-inflammatory, and it can very, very quickly reduce skin inflammation and pain. The powerful antihistamine effect is useful for all sorts of things, from insect and snake bites to wounds and cuts to stings from stinging nettles and other plants. It's a remedy for rashes, eczemas, cuts. You literally just scrunch up a leaf or two, put them in your mouth, and then, you know, release those juices and then rub it straight onto the area. But it can also be used to make ointments and tinctures and things like that, which we will get into shortly. It's a great purifier that's been used for generations to draw out things like splinters and dirt and pus, and also any infection that you might have in a wound. It has been used traditionally for blood poisoning and gangrene, for any cuts or stings, bites, splinters, things like that. As I said before, you just chew up some leaves and pop them on the area. But some people say you can use the young leaves in salads, as I've already said. I personally don't recommend that myself. Just I think there are nicer things out there to forage for if you're talking about gathering plants purely for food. But the seeds, on the other hand, can be quite nice. They can be eaten raw or cooked. They're a great source of vitamin B1, and you can actually make flour out of them. Obviously, always wash the plant well if you're going to be saving it for later use. If you want to make a tea, then you would just add a few chopped leaves into a cup or a teapot and use just like a tea bag. You could add some raw honey for extra antibiotics. And lots of people recommend, you know, drinking that just a few times a day. When you take it internally, it has been said to help with indigestion, heartburn, ulcers, coughs, colds, all those kinds of things. But it can also certainly help with hay fever. Again, it's those antihistamine properties that we're talking about there. If you want to make a tincture, then there are two really ways you can do it. And one of the common ways is an alcohol-based tincture, where you would basically take some really, really strong alcohol and you would use that to soak a lot of the plantain leaf in. But if you wanted to make an alcohol-free tincture, which is something I would use, I don't normally drink, and is also suitable for children, then you can also use apple cider vinegar to make that dilution with. And then you just use it just like you would anything else. You might have a few drops every day or as and when required. You can also make an ointment by mixing it with other things, including olive oil. So there's a million and one ways that you can use it. It's super available. It's super easy to find. It's super easy to identify. As I've said, I've done a video on the identification of this one as well on our YouTube channel. So maybe go and check that out. But it is right up there, along with the last two that I want to talk about, for being the medicinal herbs that you really ought to get to know. This is right up near the top of the list.
You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficientherb. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible.
So our penultimate plant that I want to talk to you about today is yarrow. Now, yarrow has an extremely long history of medicinal use. It was used as recently as World War I as a method for staunching wounds, stopping bleeding. It is a styptic. It's an incredibly common garden plant. Again, you will have yarrow growing in your garden or near your garden. It's got feathery leaves. It's another one that I've done a identification video on. There are times of the year when it's easier to identify than others. It can look a little bit like chamomile at some times, but it is, as I said, super easy to identify and super, super common. And if you don't know what it looks like, then check out our YouTube video on the subject. It can grow to a couple of feet tall. And there are multiple species within the Achillea genus, and some wild natives and ornamental cultivars even. So it's, like I say, it's readily available. It's a plant that was cultivated and used all around the world as not only a medicinal plant, but also a flowering plant. And as a result, it's got pretty much everywhere. And with that rich history and its breadth of uses, it's also got a breadth of medicinal properties. So common yarrow is probably one of the most widely used medicinal plants today, even if it isn't as widely known as it should be. So the medicinal properties it has are extensive, and the benefits that this plant has been widely known and widely used for such a long time is that there's been a number of studies done on it, which means that I'm far more comfortable recommending it to people than I am some of the more nuanced uses of other plants. So there, one of the studies conducted by researchers of the Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology at the University of Vienna showed that the antiseptic effects may help to soothe symptoms of IBS as well. And it's been long considered by people who are knowledgeable within the herbalist community to be a blood-moving herb, a herb that increases or aids blood flow. But as I mentioned earlier with the meadow sweet, where you've got a plant that contains two different characteristics that kind of seem to counteract one another, it's also been used as a blood staunching plant, or a plant that can stop bleeding. And that's one of the things that I think it is most useful to know it for. So it's got, and that property is called a styptic property. So it's also got antimicrobial properties, and the combination of this styptic and antimicrobial properties is that it's great for preventing infection and to aid both the wound healing but also the blood circulation underneath that wound. So it's often used as a poultice, where you could use it to basically apply it directly to a wound to help it heal. And it's also going to help with infection. It can be beneficial in alleviating digestive complaints and also symptoms of colds and flus. It's been used to treat things like hemorrhoids, menstrual discomfort, and also bleeding inside the mouth. So there are a million and one different ways you can use it. And some people recommend it you chew it instead of using any other kind of relief for toothache. You can use it to make all the usual infused oils, poultices, tinctures that I've already mentioned. And as I said, it's just one of the most important ones to know because it's so readily available and so useful. The final one that I'm going to mention is a mushroom, and that is the birch polypore. Now, among medicinal mushrooms that people might forage for, this is the king of the hill. This really is the one with the most uses. It's an anti-inflammatory, anti-tumor, anti-parasitic, antiseptic, antiviral, antibacterial, styptic, immune booster. It really does do it all. It's got a huge history of studies behind it, and it's got a huge number of uses. It came to the fore of people's consciousness when it was found on the body of Otzi, and Otzi was a 5,500-year-old mummy found preserved in ice in the Alps. And amongst his kit that he was carrying around him was two strips of animal leather onto which had been threaded pieces of birch polypore. And he was later, at autopsy, was found to be infected with some parasites in his intestine. And it was proved that it was shown that the birch polypore is actually effective against these parasites. So it's been used as a medicinal plant for literally thousands and thousands of years. And there are a vast array of studies showing the benefits. It's being used in studies right now to try and prove its benefits for anti-tumor in terms of a cat's treatment. I really need to reiterate, I'm not suggesting that anyone uses any of these medicines instead of using the doctor and the doctor's prescribed alternatives insofar as treating serious illnesses. I think it's really important that you go and see your doctor. And I also think that you should see your doctor and let him know that you're going to be using some of these medicinal herbs, because I don't think that a desire to want to use a natural remedy means that we can't also use science and the technology and advances that we've made as a species. And I think that the two can go hand in hand. We don't need to choose one or the other. And I think that's really, really important. So whatever you're thinking of doing, consult your doctor and use it alongside his recommendations and with his knowledge, because that way you know you're going to be receiving the best possible care, because your doctor will know the benefits of most of these things, and he will also know the best course of action for you personally. So I certainly don't want you to take me to be a snake oil salesman who is suggesting that all of these things can cure cancer and everything else. They certainly can be beneficial, and they certainly can help alongside traditional treatments, and for minor ailments they can be used on their own, but they are not a replacement for modern medicine. But the Birch polypore is something that I actually use. We dry it here and I make a tea of it that I maybe drink once or twice a week. And I just use that to help maintain a lot of my immune system and to ward off lots of different things. Obviously, it doesn't help you reduce the number of falls you have from ladders, as I found out. But yeah, I do recommend it. It makes a reasonable tea. It's a little bit bitter. There's lots and lots of medicinal fungi out there, and I do recommend you do your own research. But the birch polypore is one that is quite easy to find. It's quite readily available. And I'm not sure how common it is actually in the southern hemisphere, but I know in the northern hemisphere in temperate regions, it's fairly widespread. So I assumed it had made its way around the world, but I could well be wrong there. But it grows exclusively on birch trees. It's easy to identify. And as I said, it's been shown to have lots and lots of really, really good health properties. So I hope you found that interesting. Do dig a little bit deeper. Do take this as a jumping off point. If you don't do anything else, if you are averse to doing any deep diving yourself, then just go and check out my videos on yarrow and plantain. And I think that would probably be a good enough starting point to go from, to take from this podcast and go forwards. But if you're so inclined, then I do encourage you to dig a lot deeper, look into the science, look into the studies, look into the claims, and find what works for you. Thanks for listening, and I will speak to you guys soon.
If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.